ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading today from the 10th canto, chapter 12, chapter entitled The Killing of the Demon Agasura, text number 34. ततो तिरस्ता स्वकृतो कृतारणम् पुष्पे सुगा अप्सरसश्च मर्तनै गीते सुरा वाद्यदरश्च वादय तावश्च विप्राजय निःस्वनैर्गन्ति गणाः Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Thereafter, everyone being pleased, the demigods began to shower flowers from Nandana Kanan. The celestial dancing girls began to dance, and the Gandharvas, who are famous for singing, offered songs of prayer. The drummers began to beat their kettle drums, and the Brahmanas offered Vedic hymns. In this way, both in the heavens and on earth, everyone began to perform his own duties, glorifying the Lord. Purport. Everyone has some particular duty. The Shastra has concluded, nirupitaha, that everyone should glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his own qualifications. If you are a singer, always glorify the Supreme Lord by singing very nicely. If you are a musician, glorify the Supreme Lord by playing musical instruments. Swanasthityasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam, Bhagavatam 1.2.13. The perfection of life is to satisfy the personality of Godhead. Therefore, beginning from this earth up to the celestial kingdom, everyone is engaged in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The decision of all great saintly persons is that whatever qualifications one has acquired should be utilized to glorify the Supreme Lord. Idam hi pumsa tapasa trusatsya srutasya va svitasya suktasya cha buddhi dattayo avichyutorita kavi binirupito yaduttama shloka gunanu varnanam. Learned sages have definitely concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, austerity, Vedic study, sacrifice, the chanting of hymns and charity is found in the transcendental descriptions of the qualities of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. Bhagavatam 1.5.22. This is the perfection of life. One should be trained how to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by one's respective qualities. Education, austerity, penance, or in the modern world, business, industry, education, and so on. All should be engaged in glorifying the Lord. Then everyone in the world will be happy. Krishna comes therefore to exhibit his transcendental activities so that people may have the chance to glorify him in every respect. To understand how to glorify the Lord is actually his actual research work. It is not that everything should be understood without God. That is condemned. Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastram Japastapaha Apranasyeva Dehasya Mandanam Loka Ranjanam Hari Bhakti Shuddhodai 3.11. Without Bhagavad Bhakti, without glorification of the Supreme Lord, whatever we have is simply a decoration of the dead body. Seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas. to be able to speak on this very wonderful purport of Srila Prabhupada. So we are seeing over here how Srila Prabhupada is focusing on the various duties that we all have to perform, you know, as part of our daily life. And Srila Prabhupada is saying here that different people have different duties, and we have to aspire to perform our duties to the best of our ability. And all those abilities have to be dovetailed towards glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada is giving the example, if you are a singer, then use that singing ability to glorify the Lord. If you are a dancer, then use that dancing ability to glorify the Lord, and so on and so forth. And Prabhupada also mentions that if you are having any expertise in education or business or industry, then use that in glorifying the Lord. But we see today people do have a lot of abilities. In fact, if these abilities were to be actually used in Krishna consciousness, then there is no limit to how Krishna consciousness would have advanced. But unfortunately, because the perception is that if we use these abilities for our own sake or for our own pleasure or for our own sense gratification, then there is a greater amount of satisfaction. So that's a perception, that if we use it for our own selves, then there is a much greater satisfaction that will come from that particular usage. And because of that, we see how people use the entire amount of time that they have just in pursuit of trying to engage these abilities, either for making money or for earning prestige, name, fame, glory, or doing some mundane charitable work. So the root reason or the main reason why they are doing it is only so that they can be glorified. You know, they can earn a name for themselves, or they can make a substantial amount of money, without realizing that ultimately all these abilities sooner or later has to end. For some it's sooner, some it's later. I remember a few months back when we were in the US, one of our godbrothers was working in a company, and this company is owned by Microsoft, and it's one of the well-known search engines, you know, just like Google. So if you want to search something on the internet, it's said, Google it, right? So this is a search engine called Bing. So this is owned by Microsoft. So within Microsoft, they never talk about Google. So they'll say, if you want to search for something, Bing it. So anyway, this person, this godbrother of ours, said, he told us one day that, why don't you come and visit my office? And his office was located on a 26-storied building. And so we said, okay, on a Sunday, we decided to go to his office. So he took us to his office, and, you know, his office was on the 20th floor, and very beautiful view. And then he asked me, would you like to see the office of my president? So we said, fine. And then he took us to the 26th floor, which was the topmost floor in that building. And you know, we went through a maze of offices. Practically the entire building was empty. There was nobody working in the whole office. Naturally, it was a Sunday. And all of a sudden, we just entered into a very, very large room. You know,
it was of course a cabin, and then the passage was just ended at that cabin. And we were taken by surprise because we were seeing that there was somebody working in their office. And, you know, he lifted his head up to see, you know, and all of us were there. So, you know, so he just gave a very, you know, uninterested look at us as if, you know, it really didn't matter. And then he just continued to do his work. And, you know, so we just went on the tour and then completed. And then as we were coming down, then this God brother, his name is Gaur Kumar Prabhu. So he's also a PhD, and you know, he's done his PhD in US, and he was working for this company. So he was telling us about this person. His name was Chi Lu. He's a Chinese, and of course, the word Chi, it's actually spelt as QI. It's not CHE. It is QI, but it is pronounced as Chi. And if you Bing him, you know, he'll be able to get his full thing on the Wikipedia. But so, and he was telling me about this person, and it's such a remarkable you know, abilities that this person has. You know, he was born in a very, very poor family in China, and he was so poor that his family members, you know, his parents could not afford to raise him up, so they gave him in adoption to his to one of the uncles, and this uncle brought him up, and he finished his education, his basic education in China, and then he started working in a job, and then it is said that his salary was $10 a month. Now $10 a month even in India is ridiculous, right? That's 500-600 rupees, right? Of course in the US $10 is nothing. Right, people earn minimum. I mean, the average wage is around $30 an hour. Right, so $10 a month. Anyway, this person, he was working, and you know, one day he just happened to go to a lecture that was conducted by a professor from Carnegie Mellon, who had, you know, who had come to visit his town. So he just happened to go and attend the lecture, and during the course of the lecture, there was some, you know, he asked some very interesting questions. And this professor, you know, he was extremely inspired to hear these questions. And after the lecture was over, he called him to the side and asked him what he was doing. And he told him that, you know, would you be interested in coming to the US? I'll sponsor you to do your further studies in the Carnegie Mellon University, which is one of the most prestigious universities in the US. So this, naturally, Chilu said that he is ready, and then he went to the Carnegie Mellon University, and then he did his PhD over there. Right? And after he did his PhD, he joined Yahoo. And then just a few years back, he actually left Yahoo and joined this Bing company as the president. And if you look at his schedule, the way he spends his whole day, it's really unbelievable. He sleeps just 3 hours a day. And this is not like, you know, he does this for 5 days a week. He does this for 7 days of the week. Right? For years. He's been doing this for years. 3 hours a day he sleeps. I mean, he steps out of his office at midnight. Right? And then he goes home. And then he sleeps, gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Right, so assuming he leaves at midnight, I mean, and of course the company had given him an apartment on the top floor of a five-star hotel, which is right adjacent to his office. So he didn't have to do much commuting. So he would go to his place, and you know, assuming that he would go to sleep by 12:30 at night, or maybe quarter to 11, quarter to 1, or 1 o'clock, he would be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, right? And then he would jog on a treadmill for 4 miles, and then he would leave his place by 5:30 to be in his office at 6. So from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight, he's in the office. 7 days a week. Right? Because that day was a Sunday, and he was working on that particular Sunday. So, you know, and all this is given in Wikipedia. You know, so now a person who has achieved such a tremendous amount of recognition in the outside world, I mean, he is, you know, like, from Yahoo, he was actually picked up by the chairman of Microsoft. Steve Ballmer is the chairman of Microsoft. He was he was phoned, and you know, he's on the telephone, he invited him to join his company, and you know, he gave him complete freedom to do whatever he wanted to run this company. And you know, this person was so much excited. And it is said that even on the last day, his loyalty, it is not, you know, for him, the passion is just to work. You know, like we see in the Mahabharata, there are, you know, all these great Kshatriyas. For them, the passion is to fight. You know, like we see from the example of Shalya, right? Now, Shalya was actually related to the Pandavas. Of course, he was related to the Kauravas also. But then he actually wanted to fight on the side of the Pandavas. But then, when he got this wonderful reception from Duryodhan, and, you know, he came to Duryodhan and then he made the statement that whoever has given me such a wonderful reception, I will actually be ready to do anything for him. You know, which is actually what Duryodhan wanted. And then, you know, Duryodhan told him that you fight on my side. So, similarly, for such a person, the passion is not the position or not the status or not the amount of money that he's earning. It's just the passion to work. And it is said that on his last day in Yahoo, right? Now, normally when you are on the last day in a company, I mean, nobody would be really interested in doing any amount of work. Who cares? You know, the company, I'm going to leave the company anyway. But this man, there was some problem which required him to be involved. And he was, you know, working on this problem till midnight. And what are the reason why he had to finish off? Was because at midnight, you know, because he had already resigned from the company, his network, passwords, everything got shut. He could no longer access the computer. Right? I mean, this is all programmed in the West, you know, when a person leaves, it's exactly programmed that at midnight, full access to all the databases, everything is closed, whoever you may be. Right? So, at 12 o'clock at midnight, as he was working, suddenly he saw that he had no more access to the computer. So, he had to, you know, finish his work. So, that was the amount of passion that he had for his work. It's just the sheer, you know. So, I was just thinking to myself that just imagine if such a person were to be in Krishna consciousness, what is the, you know, amount of, you know, contribution that he would have done for our movement, you know. I mean, from a practical point of view, this is exactly what Srila Prabhupada was doing. You know, sleeping for 3 hours, and then the whole day Srila Prabhupada was practically driving himself on different things, you know, management and giving classes and going for his walk and having his massages done, and you know, so from a pure performance point of view, of course the spiritual abilities are different, but from a pure performance point of view, we could see that here was a person who could drive himself. And as I was saying, you know, it's there on the Wikipedia. It was not that he was doing this for days or weeks or months. He was doing this for years. The schedule that he was maintaining was, and you know, and all the people with whom he would be working, you know, they would have such high praises for, I mean, none of them would be able to keep up to his schedule, you know, because his pace was so fantastic. So this is the, you know, passion, you know, that people have in this material world that just drives them to do more and more and more and more work, right? But for what? Finally, at the end of the day, you know, when you're 60 or 65 or 70, because most companies have a retirement policy, right? You just can't continue beyond that date, whatever you want to do, whoever you may be, you're just kicked out, right? At midnight, when you're 70 years of age, you know, all your network accesses are shut off. You don't have any more access to the computers. And we see this happening again and again and again. I mean, this is a real life situation where a person works like a dog for a company, and then finally when a particular situation comes when, you know, he's just too old to be working, the company just kicks him out. Maybe gives him a few dollars or gives him a few rupees, but, and then later on when he goes back to the company, nobody even recognizes him. Right? So it's so sad that a person who is got so much of abilities doesn't have this basic understanding that whatever abilities he has will finally, you know, be of no use. Which is unlike what we see in the scriptures. Like yesterday, His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu was giving this wonderful Bhagavatam class on Maharaj Ambarish. And if you look at Maharaj Ambarish's life, and if you really, you know, read from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Ambarish, this particular shloka,
Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayor Vacham Sivaikunta Gunanu Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjana Disho Shrutem Chakrachuta Sat Katodaye.
So this shloka, these three shlokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of the lotus feet of Krishna, his words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleaning the Lord's temples, and his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples, Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of the tulsi offered to the Lord. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord. His head in bowing down before the Lord. And all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours of the day. Right? So this, you know, all this description is given. And then it said that Ambarish Maharaj was engaged in worshipping the Lord 24 hours of the day. Right? And then the next shloka explains how he was doing it. In performing his prescribed duties as king, Maharaj Ambarish always offered the results of his royal activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is the enjoyer of everything and is beyond the perception of material senses. He certainly took advice from Brahmanas who were faithful devotees of the Lord, and thus he ruled the planet Earth without difficulty. So we see over here how Maharaj Ambarish is completely different from this Chilu. The name itself is, you know, for us, I mean, must be meaning something there in China, but for us it's so absurd. So the thing is that, you know, and Radha Gopinath Prabhu was explaining about how Maharaj Ambarish, you know, in his life, serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead was the only reason for his existence. And there was this very beautiful story that he narrated about this king by the name Man Singh and the king by the name Jai Singh. Right? And this happened just 200 years ago. So there was this king, Man Singh, who was wanting, you know, to gain complete supremacy over the neighboring land. And there was this particular king, Jai Singh, who was always coming in his way. So this Man Singh had taken charge of practically the entire area in the neighborhood. But this particular place that Jai Singh ruled over, Man Singh had absolutely no chance of gaining control over. He tried so many times. And the thing was that Jai Singh was a very great devotee of the Lord. So he had a deity of Lord Krishna, and he would have a very, very fixed schedule of worshipping the deity every day from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning. For 3 hours, he would just shut himself inside and he would be worshipping the deities. And nothing could ever come in the way of his worship of these deities. You know, nobody could disturb him, whatever may happen. Right? And this was the instruction that was conveyed to everybody in his whole kingdom. So, this Man Singh, you know, he wanted to find out how, you know, what is this so-called Achilles heel of Jai Singh? How is it that he could somehow or the other overpower Jai Singh? So he sent his spies to the kingdom of Jai Singh, and then the spies came and reported that, you know, this king, he worships the deities every day from 6 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock, so that is the best time to attack the kingdom. So Man Singh made his preparations and, you know, they attacked the kingdom at the time when the king was inside worshipping the deities. And then the commander-in-chief came running to the palace and started saying that somehow, you know, the door is closed. They don't dare disturb the king. So the commander-in-chief went to the ministers and requested the ministers, please tell the king that, you know, this is a time of crisis. This is an emergency. And then the minister said, no, we can't disturb the king. The only person who could actually do it is the queen mother. You know, the mother of the king. I mean, because, you know, after all, she's the mother. So they went and told the mother, and then the mother went and knocked on the door. They knocked. She knocked once, twice, three times, four times. And then the fifth time, you know, when she was knocking really hard, the door opened and the king looked out and, you know, with a very grave expression, and he asked, so what's wrong? You know, why are you disturbing me? And then, you know, before she could reply, the king just closed the door once again on her face. Boom. And the queen went to the commander-in-chief and the ministers and said, what can I do? I tried. I'm sorry. You know, I can't do anything better than this. And then 2 minutes later, again the door opened. And Jai Singh came out like a thunderbolt, just rushed out. And, you know, he was carrying two swords in his hand. He went straight to his horse. He got onto his horse and went straight into the army of Man Singh. And then just himself, I mean, he had no army, but just himself with two hands, with swords, he decimated the whole army of Man Singh. Completely destroyed it. And then, you know, he came back, got on from the horse, rushed into the puja room and closed the door once again. So, after about 15 minutes, you know, Jai Singh opened the door and came out, you know, very nice, sweet expression on his face, you know, very satisfied, very blissful expression on his face. I mean, he had worshipped the deities for 3 hours. And, you know, the commander-in-chief over there with all smiles, and he said, everything is fine, you know, the kingdom is safe. Man Singh and his whole army are destroyed. So, thank you very much. So, you know, he said, thank you very much. So, Jai Singh said, why are you thanking me? What did I do? You know, I was busy worshipping the deities. And the commander-in-chief explained to him that, you know, how you came out like a rocket and, you know, you went over there with two swords. You just finished off the whole army. And then Jai Singh said, okay, let me go and see the army. And then he went over there. And to his surprise, all the warriors who were lying down over there, who were not yet dead, they had such effulgent faces, such blissful faces, you know. So, Jai Singh immediately realized that, you know, this was actually the Lord who had, and, you know, Radha Gopinath Prabhu was saying that this just happened 2 years back, or 200 years back. Yeah, so Ananyas Chintayanto Mam Ye Jana Paryupasate Tesham Nityabhiyuktanam Yogakshemam Vahamiham. The Lord preserves what we have and carries what He lacks, what we lack. So this, you know, is the mood of a devotee, that he is surrendered to Krishna. And what does he expect from Krishna? He expects nothing, you know. He just wants to do service. And throughout his life, you know, a devotee would be only trying to maintain the highest standards of virtue and purity. Because that is what the Lord is expecting out of him. Like we see from the Mahabharata, how Maharaj Yudhishthir, in fact all the Pandavas, you know, in spite of so much of setbacks consistently that were happening in their lives, they never ever deviated from the path of Dharma. Even after the battle of Kurukshetra that took place, when their five sons were killed by Ashwatthama, brutally, right? Draupadi was in so much anguish that she told Arjuna that, please, for my sake, kill this son of a Brahmana and bring him to me. And then Arjuna takes a vow and says that, you know, when I will get the head of Ashwatthama, and after I bring his head, then you perform the final rites for your sons, and then you stand on the head of Ashwatthama and then take your bath. So then Arjuna gets into the chariot along with Krishna, and then they chase Ashwatthama. And Ashwatthama, you know, because he was seeing that death personified is coming in front of him, he releases the Brahmastra. Although he didn't know how to retract it. He was a son of Dronacharya, but Dronacharya did not teach him how to retract the Brahmastra, which he had actually taught to Arjuna. So Ashwatthama released, and here, just a couple of days back, Gaurang Prabhu was making this very nice point that actually, you know, when somebody is taught something which he doesn't have full knowledge about, then such a thing in his hands can actually be misutilized. Like we see today, technology, you know, itself, if it is in proper hands, it can be, you know, there is so much of wonderful things that can come out of technology. But if it is in the hands of a person who is not able to control his senses, or he doesn't know how to use it, then it can be very destructive. Right? Like a few years back, when this Cold War was going on between America and Russia, you know, this, and everybody knew that this atomic weapons were trained at the respective countries. And there was a particular location in the US, right in the middle of a desert, where the control center for all these missiles was located. And this control center could be activated. It was unmanned. There was nobody there in that control center. And it could be activated only by a telephone call, right, with a particular password. So if a person from anywhere in the world makes a telephone call to that particular number in that control center and gives a particular password, then all the missiles that are located over there go towards Russia. Right? And of course, this particular telephone number and the telephone was with the President of the United States of America. Right? But somehow by the causeless mercy of Krishna, nothing ever happened till now. Yeah, but after that, the Cold War got over, and now, of course, Russia is not there anymore. There's no more Russia in one sense. The USSR is completely disbanded now. So those missiles are no longer active. But the point is that if these missiles, you know, really came in the hands of somebody who was, you know, who had no understanding of what could be the consequences, you could imagine what is the catastrophe that could be created. So Ashwatthama, he released this Brahmastra without knowing how to retract it. And then Krishna instructs Arjuna, you retract the Brahmastra. And then Arjuna releases his own Brahmastra, and then he calls back Ashwatthama's Brahmastra also. And then Arjuna releases the weapon by which Ashwatthama is bound. And then Arjuna goes and catches hold of him by his hair and puts him on his chariot and brings him to Draupadi. Now, can you imagine the scene? You know, on one side, all the relatives of the Pandavas have gone. Each and everyone who was close to the Pandavas had been destroyed. And finally, these five sons, you know, were just young boys, and they were sleeping. They were not even in a condition that they could protect themselves. Like Drishtadyumna was also one of the persons who was there in the camp when Ashwatthama attacked. And Drishtadyumna was killed by Ashwatthama in such a horrible way. You know, for a Kshatriya to be killed on the battlefield is no great deal. I mean, he welcomes it because he knows that if I'm killed on the battlefield, I go home. I mean, I go to the heavenly kingdoms, right? I go to this eternal place of bliss. But Ashwatthama, knowing that Drishtadyumna was a cause of killing his father, he didn't want that Drishtadyumna should be enjoying in the heavenly planets. So he kills him in a very obnoxious way. He kills him with his foot. Now he stamps him on his neck and crushes his neck. And Drishtadyumna is crying out, you know, please kill me with a sword. Ashwatthama, please kill me with a sword. And Ashwatthama told him that, you know, you don't deserve such a death. You deserve to be killed like this. And then with his legs, you know, he crushes Drishtadyumna. So this, the same Ashwatthama is now bound by Arjuna and brought to Draupadi, and Draupadi is, you know, in such a state that, you know, she, any woman in her situation would have behaved in exactly the same way. But then the moment Ashwatthama is brought to her, her heart completely changes. And then she thinks about Ashwatthama's mother, Kripi. And then she tells Arjuna, you please release him. You can't bind him like this because after all he's the son of a Brahmana. Please release him. And also she says that, you know, I don't want Kripi to go through the same thing that I am going through. Now I've lost my five sons, and the only reason why Kripi did not ascend the funeral pyre of her husband is because she had a son. And, you know, if you're going to kill Ashwatthama, then, you know, Kripi would be in the same situation like me. So, please, let her not go through this, what I'm going through. And then Krishna was so pleased that he said, yes, what you have made, what statement you have made is excellent. And then everybody supported her except Bhima. Right? So Bhima said, no, he should be killed. And then finally, Krishna had to intervene and, you know, say that he told Arjuna that you kill him in such a way that he is, that we satisfy both. We satisfy Draupadi also as well as Bhimasen. And then Arjuna takes off the jewel of Ashwatthama and shaves off his head in five different places and sends him away. Right? So that is the compassion of a devotee like Draupadi. Right? Which is similar to the compassion of Arjuna, because Arjuna was a Vaishnava. We see in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? After experiencing all whatever they have gone through, and finally they have come on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. When this is the time that they have been eagerly looking forward to for the last 14 years, they have been just meditating on this. And then they have now come to that particular situation where they know that they are going to win because Krishna is on their side. And then Arjuna, looking at all the warriors on the other side, he becomes so compassionate. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that this is the nature of a devotee. A devotee is naturally compassionate. During the course of his duty, he will try to perform his duty to the best of his abilities, but at the same time, you know, he will do it without losing sight of the fact that, you know, there are certain moral rules and regulations that he has to be working within. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport concludes by saying that Krishna comes, therefore, to exhibit his transcendental activities so that people may have a chance to glorify him in every respect. To understand how to glorify the Lord is actual research work. It is not that everything should be understood without God. That is condemned. So we'll stop over here. Are there any comments or questions? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.